laborer's day was a long day. You would usually get up at 4 a.m., and the first thing you did was feed your mules. They need about 1 hour to properly digest their grain before being asked to work hard. After the mules were fed, you would fix your own breakfast, ready your boat for the trip, set your tow line, and harness and hitch the mules. Mules were worked in 6 to 8 hour shifts called tricks on the canal, and when the mules were tired, you'd switch them with a fresh team you carried on your boat. You would work approximately 16 to 18 hours a day. The boat captain would usually steer the boat. Captains were almost always men. If the crew was a family, the kids drove the mules, and the mother cooked, cleaned, laundered, helped steer, took care of the small children, and whatever else was necessary. Canal boating had its problems. Canaller James Eaton remembered.
A loaded boat was the hardest to keep control of because you had that coal in it. You really had to push on her sometimes to keep from hitting the side of the lock going in. It was a little ticklish.
When we stopped at night, we tied the boat, tied it to a tree or post, or sometimes to a snubbing post and a lock. And we take a big iron stake about 5 feet long, drive it down in the dirt. Then you tie a trough on that to feed your mules. We take the mule harness off and pile them on the bank. Throw a piece of canvas over them in case it rained while you were taking your nap. Most boats would tie up at 9 o'clock and stay until 4 o'clock in the morning.
The mules were changed every 6 hours, as was the crew. If it was too far to the next lock, the mules were sometimes changed while the boat was underway.
We put the long foreboard, a gangway, for the mules up. It hung with 2 chains from the boat. Hanging over the bank, you'd stop the mules on the towpath and the boat would slacken up a bit. You'd straighten the foreboard up and leave the mules in the stable. Hop off first, then you have to hold these others on the towpath for them to come out or they go and eat with them. It's a funny thing. When you go to put a mule into the boat, it's a little hard to put them in there first. But after you put them in there once, you'll hardly be able to hold them out later. If you boat in late day, the mules know when your 6 hours is up. When they let out a yell and a holler, you better be right on the foreboard chains, because they're coming back and trying to get in the boat.
Most boats on the C&O Canal were freight boats designed for transportation of goods. The boats were generally of a standard size and design. They were about 14.5 feet wide and 92 feet long, about 6 inches narrower than the locks on the canal. Each boat had 3 cabins. The forward cabin was the mule stable. The middle cabin was the hay house where the hay was kept for the mules. Often there was a bunk there as well for one of the mule drivers. The aft or stern cabin was the living quarters of the crew. Many boats were staffed by families. The aft cabin was 10 by 12 feet in size. There was a small cabin about 4 by 6 feet offset from the main cabin, which was called a stateroom. The stateroom was the adult bedroom. There were bunks in the main part of the cabin for the other crew members. There also were small cabinet areas for storage and a crawl space under the stern in the quarterdeck area for additional storage or sleeping. The family cabin usually had a coal stove for cooking. As coal was the principal cargo, there was always coal around to use in the stove. Corn cobs left over from corn fed to the mules were used for kindling to start the fire in the morning.
Our cabin was always spotless, small, but neat. Mother made it home for Father and me. We had 2 bunk beds, table and chairs, a coal stove, and cupboards for dishes. 2 oil lamps with chimneys shining, so clean from Mother's polishing that they reflected the whole cabin. There were always crisp curtains at the tiny windows, and the floor was always a shiny clean, although it was just a plank floor, for it was scrubbed every day by Mother.
Evelyn Pryor Liston talked of caring for mules in the front cabin of the boat.
We had to wait until they dried off. Their hair was short, and it wasn't no time drying. You had a brush with a handle. You put your hand through the handle and brushed them. We used to have big sponges, and oh, we'd make over them. We'd get a bucket of water and wet the sponges and rub them down. Oh, they loved that.
Coal was the main cargo carried by boats. 120 tons of it could be hauled by the canal boats. The boatmen saved whatever coal was left after unloading. James Eaton remembered,
"Generally, when you got unloaded, they wouldn't get all that coal out from under the bow or out from under the stern. There'd always be a little bit left in there. Every trip we came back to Cumberland for a load, we'd pull over and get all that little bit extra out and put it in a pile when we got to North Branch of Lock 75. After the last load, when the season was over, we'd come back to that pile where we'd been putting a little bit at a time and load it all on the boat. It'd keep us in coal all winter."
Various types of cargo were carried by canal boats, not just coal. Captain Bill Clipper explained,
"When you had a load of grain, you'd boat it down at night to be there in the morning. An agent would come up and look at the load and pass it. If it was a bit damaged, I'd take him up the street, go into a bar room, and have a couple of shots together. Then he'd pass it. If the agent passed it, they sent the wagons up."
Many children were born on canal boats and grew up on the canal. When they were toddlers, canal children were literally harnessed to the roof of the boat so they couldn't fall off and drown. Children grew up early on the canal. Most children started work at an early age, commonly around 8 or 9, but sometimes as early as 6. Usually, their first job was to learn to drive and care for the family mules.
"I was walking the towpath and did a 6-hour trip, night and day. I don't think there's an inch of it that I haven't tramped a couple of times. I went barefoot the whole summer. The little old honeybees that get on the clover, I'd tramp on them and get a bee between my toes. And I didn't mind it. They'd sting me a few, but I'd keep on going. There were certain sections of the canal where there was gravel. My feet would get raw on the bottom. Blood and water would run out of them. I'd go at night, but what worried me the most was that I'd tramp on an old snake somebody had killed, and his bones would stick in my feet."
Rally Bender was a mule driver. He said he rode the mules at night because he was afraid.
"The captain couldn't see me riding the mule after night. They'd play cards at both ends of the boat, and they'd never leave us kids to get on the boat. They'd run us off and tell us all kinds of tales about meeting someone with no head, or something on the level. I never met one, but I was always ready for him. I was always on that mule. The mule was protection."
Children appreciated the mule for many reasons. Many believed that their mules could even see in the dark. James Eaton recalled,
"I don't care how pitch dark, when you couldn't even see, the old mule always knew where he was going. There were saloons along the canal, different places. Maybe after midnight you'd come by one of those saloons and there'd be drunks who'd wander off across the lock gates and passed out on the towpath. The old mule would never step on him. They were smart."
The trip from Cumberland to Georgetown usually took about 5 days. Generally, a round trip from Georgetown to Cumberland and then back to Georgetown would take you about 2 weeks.
This series is produced by the C&O Canal Trust in partnership with the C&O Canal National Historical Park. For information about the C&O Canal Trust and about this series, visit www.canaltrust.org.